Over the past couple of years, I became a bit of a hockey fan, and there's something that I like to do because it just kind of makes me laugh a little bit. Whenever there's a game, I like to go on the subreddit for the team on either side, the winning team and the losing team. And it's funny what I notice about the way people talk about how the game went. The winners will always say, like, we're the best, we did so well. I mean, give and take. The losers will always say, we suck, we're the worst, we screwed all this up. It's never attribution on the other side of the fence. You never see the winners go, wow, they played a terrible game, and that's why we won. Every now and then you'll get like a comment saying something like that. And then on the losing side, you definitely won't see anyone complimenting the other team saying, oh, we played okay, but they played so well, you know, they really deserve the win. And it's a funny psychological battle thing that I've noticed. It just kind of speaks to our human nature. And I think that kind of applies to Go as well. When we win, sometimes we give ourselves a lot of credit and maybe don't think about maybe the other person had a bad day. And then when we lose, we also critique ourselves the most and beat ourselves down, not thinking about whether the other person had a great day. And maybe that's something that we can work on as we develop our mental as we play this game. Welcome to Start Point, the show about Go for Go fans away from the board. There was a tournament, a correspondence tournament that started 2020, well in the coronavirus pandemic, and I was invited to this correspondence tournament on OGS, but this tournament wasn't just any tournament, it was very, very, very big. I think the count of players exceeds 2,000. It started in 2020, and with this many players in a single tournament, in a correspondence tournament, that's going to take quite a while. We are currently, well, not me, but that tournament is currently on round 2 of 12 after starting in 2020, in June of 2020. Now, reaching 2025, they're not even close to halfway. They're barely getting to maybe a quarter of the way through. The time it takes to get through round by round will decrease significantly as people drop out of the tournament. But it's just like, that's why the tournament is actually called Through the Years Long Correspondence. And it's designed to last many years. I joined the tournament initially, but while I was playing through this tournament, I decided to go on a hard Go hiatus and resigned all my games and kind of stepped away from OGS for a while before that spark got reignited in me eventually later on. So I did play a few games in the tournament, or I don't know how many games I finished or whether I finished any, but I started out. I'm no longer in the tournament. I resigned and I got, you know, disqualified from the tournament. But that's kind of leading into what we're talking about today. The subject of today's episode, correspondence games. Overall, I think correspondence games are a great way to keep in touch with Go without putting a lot of time into it. It's such a casual, lighthearted, easy way to play Go. No need to fret about carving out an hour of your time to get a proper game in. You can play on the go wherever you are with the modern technology that we have. Using our smartphones, you can just open up OGS on your phone and slap a move down and then close your phone until the next time. It's a great way to keep in touch with Go. And I would argue, and maybe some others would argue, that correspondence is one of the purest forms of Go, because one of the things about Go, I talked about this in an early episode of Starpoint, about how we can't escape the meta stuff of Go, where time controls are always going to have to be a thing because we live in a world where time exists and you have to lay down some laws about how much time you're supposed to take between moves. But correspondence games give you such a freedom, such a large amount of time to make your move that you don't feel at all you're like under time pressure. And a lot of the ancient games lasted for very long periods of time without time control. I mean, time keeping itself is a somewhat modern technology. Clocks and things like that, they didn't come until later on. So what could they do back then? I mean, maybe they tried to time the game with some candles or something. Like, hey, actually, that'd be kind of cool. Or an hourglass. I don't think they really did that, though. They just kind of took as much time as they needed to play their moves, and then they would stop the game, recording the moves, sometimes with a sealed move, where they would record a move down on a secret piece of paper, hide it in an envelope so that we can get rid of any kind of advantage the player whose turn it is has, so that they can like think about what move they want to play over the course of the break that they're going to go on. This is the way that they used to play Go, and games would last for days. Months even, if you had these sessions separated out for more than a few days at a time. The book, The Master of Go, that game describes the kind of long-form game that happened during that time where people would just decide on a date to play their game and then stop at an appropriate time, and then the next time would be scheduled for another date in the future, and it would just take a very long time to get through a game of Go. So, in a way, maybe to the modern human being here, that sounds like just too much, over the top, too much time to be playing a game, too much of a commitment. But back then, that was normal. And even now, there are multi-day tournaments where they have to kind of reconvene after stopping. This kind of Go is also described in the other book that I read, The Girl Who Played Go, that I reviewed some number of episodes back, where the girl would go to a square where people played Go, and then the people in that square, they would just stop their game, record down what the board position was, and then resume the next day or whenever they got to meet again in the square. So that's why I guess correspondence in the modern day, with all the other forms of Go taking strict time controls to play, it could be one of the purest forms of Go, because you really have all the time in the world to put as much thought as you can into every move. I would say that a day of correspondence time even is just as unlimited as I would get. I don't know many people who would like to spend more than a day thinking about a move. Even when you're playing correspondence games, I typically take less than like 5 minutes to put down a move. I don't really spend an hour thinking about a move. But we'll get into some of the more detailed stuff later. One thing that's kind of an interesting quirk of correspondence games is that it's opened up the option of analysis mode, especially on OGS. I personally never use analysis tools. There are options on OGS for correspondence games where you can either turn on analysis or not allow analysis. I would always opt for not allowing analysis, but even when it's turned on, which means that it's perfectly fine and not cheating to use analysis tools, I don't use analysis tools. For those of you who are not informed about what analysis tools are in the correspondence games, it's just basically during the game, you can click on stones and branch out and play out variations without having to commit to a move, so you can actually see what may happen. Something doesn't feel right about that for me, although there's really, if you guys both agree that that's allowed and you like to do that, there's nothing wrong with it. And in fact, that might bring out a different skill set for Go. Maybe someone who doesn't want to focus on reading ability and wants to focus on the higher level strategy of the game, using analysis tools may be a way to explore that skill side of Go. One thing I do is put down a single stone before I start reading, which is a habit I'm trying to kick, but I just can't help it. My finger just moves on its own, because in correspondence games, you don't want to be pressing accidental moves and asking for undos. So most people, they have the setting where you play down a move and then you click submit to confirm that move. So I do put down one stone, and then that kind of lifts some weight off of a reading for me, which I'm trying to get away from again. So I'm trying to kick that habit, but those things, I wouldn't go as far as to use the entire actual analysis tool. That would take another step for me. But some great things about correspondence games overall that I think exist. I think correspondence games are a great way to keep in touch with a Go-loving friend. Maybe they live in a different part of the world where your time zones don't match up and it's hard to get a live game. Maybe you're just both busy. It's such an easy, lighthearted way to keep in touch with someone. I had a friend that always had a correspondence game running with me. And although we weren't talking much all the time, we were still playing Go. And each of those moves felt like a small form of communication and connection with that person. And I really liked that, because it's like you're not doing too much to like keep in touch with this person and like socialize and say all these words and go back and forth and, you know, all those lovely things that you do as friends, but you still feel connected to them. You still feel like you're part of their lives. And it's such a small connection. It's like a string that keeps you attached. And I love that. I also played with my dad for a period of time, correspondence, and it's great because, like, my dad and I, you know, we're men of few words with each other, but when we played correspondence, I felt like a connection with him, and it's pretty, it was a pretty nice experience, although after I beat him a few times, I think he kind of got demoralized, but I think it's a great way to keep in touch with someone, because sometimes, I don't know, everyone's different about this stuff, but like when you have conversations with people, certain people, you feel like you need to put more effort into your messages with them. Maybe that'll lead to some anxiety. I know some people have some texting anxiety. They don't like to talk with people online or through SMS because they don't know what to say and they just kind of leave them on read. Go can bypass all of that. You don't have to talk about things. You can just look at the board and play a move. And it's such a casual way. And the fact is that you can just leave them on red for a while. And no one will ever get offended. As long as you don't abandon the game entirely, you can just take the amount of time you need to play your move. And I think it's a good way to keep a light social connection with someone. Another thing I like about correspondence games is, again, how casual they are. And it gives me something to do when I have just even the slightest amount of downtime. When I'm waiting for my fiance to get out of the bathroom somewhere, or I'm waiting for her to get ready for where we're going out, or I'm waiting for her to... I can pull out my phone wherever we are, whether we're at the gym or at the mall or at the movies, and just check on my correspondence games and play a move. It's really, really easy to do that. It's my version of doom scrolling social media when I don't have access to audio, because when I have access to audio, I doom scroll through YouTube. But the fact that I can just pull it out, usually have a move or two to play and participate in a game, it's it's like, it's great just to have a few minutes to do that, because Go is a time commitment and it's so hard to find a nice amount of time to be able to play a full-on game seriously, that when your life gets busy, I feel like I can still keep in touch with Go with correspondence games. Though checking your phone at random times can be a con for correspondence games. I'll get more into that later. But basically, you're not always in the right mental state to be playing Go. One other thing that I like about Go that I don't really take advantage of is the fact that you can take notes during a correspondence game. You can take analysis notes, which I would definitely stay away from because I don't know, I just don't like it. But there's also written notes. You can kind of comment on what you were thinking about the game. On OGS, you can switch the chat function to personal notes so that you can just write things at certain moves and it'll mark down which move you wrote that at. And so you can go back later on and see what else you were wondering about that position or what your thought process was. And there's also a mode called Malkovich, which I think is in reference to the movie Being John Malkovich. I think that's what it's called. I saw it a long time ago. But anyway, it's a mode where you can type in a note, and it's kind of like a personal note in that it's hidden from your opponent and they won't see it. But as soon as the game ends, it will reveal to them what you were thinking at the time. It's a very interesting feature. I highly recommend trying it out. I know some people have used that with me on correspondence games, and I kind of felt bad because like I feel like I should have done that too for them. But it's great to see their thought process after the game, to like, because you usually don't have that detailed of a record of someone's thoughts during a game, especially not your opponent's thoughts, let alone your own. So it's a very interesting tool to have. You definitely can't really do that during most live game time settings. You just don't have the time to be writing notes about every move. Not that you have to do it for every move, but I think it's a great tool. I might start using it more often, or maybe even just the personal notes, just to keep track more of my correspondence games, because there are some struggles that you need to overcome with correspondence games, which I'll get more into later. But before that, I want to mention correspondence tournaments. The thing is that tournaments, even more so than just single games of Go, are huge time commitments, especially if you have to complete the tournament within the same time period. Playing multiple games of Go, it can be very daunting. I don't know a lot of people who can just kind of carve out that space and time and just commit to that for a while. Tournaments take a lot of time, but with correspondence games, they're kind of possible for anyone to participate in. Just sign up on OGS. There's plenty running all the time, and you can just kind of sign up for a tournament, and you'll be matched with a whole bunch of people in a round robin for tournament, and it's a great way to make your games feel more meaningful. I have a lot of fun playing in tournaments, and I feel like that's kind of my preferred way to play correspondence games now, is to just sign up for a tournament or two and participate in them, rather than just finding single matches and stacking those up. The thing about tournaments, though, it can be a little overwhelming because sometimes you get a lot of, well, I mean, obviously in the beginning of the tournament, too, you get a lot of games starting at the same time. And then just having all those blank boards to stare at, it can kind of be a little bit scary. I recommend just choosing a 4-4, 3-4 for everything, just playing some simple openings in the beginning. Eventually, you get to a natural rhythm. People who play more often kind of match your pace, and people who play more slowly, you know, you can kind of just, they kind of spread out a little bit, the games. They're not just all, you don't get like 20 notifications every day. It's like, you know, they play at different rates. So it starts to trickle into more of an even spread of a couple moves here and there throughout the day, depending on how often you want to make your moves. And it also helps people play players of a wider skill range than you're used to, because if you just use the normal match feature, yes, you can move the handles from the lower end of your rank scale to the higher end, but you're kind of just going to be mostly matched with people around your skill. Tournaments are a little more flexible, and they need to allow more players to participate in them, so you'll have a chance to play stronger players, which is actually very good for you to improve, to play stronger players in general. And then you'll also have a chance to play weaker players. And so it's kind of like a trade-off. You can kind of teach them a thing or two, and you can kind of learn a thing or two from the stronger players. And ladders are great for this as well. So there are some ladders on OGS where you can try to challenge people and overtake them in the ladder in the rankings. And you can kind of pick and choose. There's all sorts of ranks at all the ladder ranges. I mean, obviously, if you go to the very tippy top, you're going to find pretty much the strongest players on the site. But overall, like, just even without, like, outside the first top 50 or whatever, like, you can find almost any rank. It's just basically who's most determined to play more ladder games to get to the top. So what I do is I don't always just pick the weakest player that I can to climb above them. I often pick players who are stronger than me, because this is a chance to play someone who is stronger than me, and it's a great way to learn the game. All right, so those are great things about correspondence games. I love correspondence. Lately, I've been playing correspondence games, and that's been my connection to Go. I think they're a fantastic way to have a light passive connection to the game. A lot of people, just this is how they play Go. This is just the way they play Go. There are some downsides to correspondence games. Some struggles. I've been playing correspondence games for a long time, and I can tell you some of the struggles that I've had. One of them being when you play a correspondence games, although I take it casually, there are moments in most correspondence games where it becomes kind of intense, and I feel like there's something I need to read, and there's something complicated going on, and I have to kind of do a lot of reading. And when I do this reading, I often find a multi-branch reading sequence, and I find this move that works for me. And I'm like, wow, this is what I have to play, and this is my strategy. If he plays here, I'm going to play here, and then Atari this way, and do that, and do this, and this will, you know, I have all this stuff. But I play the move, and then by the next time it's my turn again, I look at the board and I'm like, oh, I remember I was doing something here, but I don't remember. And I don't remember what my plan was and why I played that move. That is, it's a little sad when you're so confident in your reading sequence, and then you find that you've forgotten it because it's just been a while. I mean, obviously, you can write some notes in the variations and keep record of it. Like, this is my plan. I've maybe done that once or twice. But overall, I don't want to do that. What I do is I play a good move after I've felt that I've read it sufficiently, and I try to trust my future self in that the future self will see the good move and read the same sequences later and figure it out again. Because if I can figure it out one time, I can probably figure it out again. And I feel like 90% of the time that works for me. Usually my thought process kind of mirrors itself. It's funny. It's kind of like this podcast. When I listen to this podcast again to just kind of proofread it, sometimes I'll be following my train of thought while I'm talking, and I'll have a few thoughts bubble up right after, and those are exactly the same thoughts that I say in the podcast. So I'm just realizing that my brain just has a certain wiring, and it just follows certain paths when I'm thinking. But it also happens on the Go board. I'll play a move, and I'll have this afterthought of, afterthought being used in a weird way here, but a thought of what that move is supposed to do and what I'm supposed to do with all the different contingencies. And if I forget the move later on, I will find that my brain can kind of pick it up again and figure that out the same way. So that's kind of been my solution, but obviously it's not a perfect solution. It's more ideal in a live game. And another thing that kind of can exacerbate this issue is that people play at different rates. If you play too many correspondence games, you'll find that a lot of people like to play fast and those games will be over really quickly because I'm a fast player. I like to play many moves like as often as I can. But certain people, they will take long for each of their moves. Some people will take a break in the middle of the game and they will resume later on and you will have totally forgotten what the game was and you have to reevaluate everything. And then sometimes you can get overwhelmed by an active spike, especially like in a tournament when you get round two starting after all the games have kind of slowed down and it's gotten quiet. Round two happens and all the games are restarted up again. You have like 20 games to play. Well, maybe not that many, but like 10 games to play all at once. And then on the other hand of the spectrum, if you play too few correspondence games, which is more often my problem, I check my phone too often hoping for a move and there's nothing there and I get bored and I'm like, okay, I'm going to join another tournament, and then suddenly there's a huge active spike and I'm like, oh no, I have too many moves to play, I gotta keep going. But I can usually handle the amount of moves that I assign myself. I've seen some crazy OGS accounts playing hundreds of correspondence games at once. It's crazy. I don't know how they manage that. I remember my friend looked at my correspondence games. I had like 10 to 20 active, and he was just kind of like, how do you keep track of all these games? Because he's a bit of a thinker, and I think he kind of sees Go as something where you just kind of treat that one game very, very seriously, which probably is a good way to think about it. But I like having a game to look at whenever I open the OGS website. Another thing that can be kind of a struggle with correspondence games is that you're not always in the sharpest state of mind to be playing Go. Sometimes I remember I would like be tired, about to go to sleep, and then I see this move and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna play this. I go to sleep, I wake up and I realize, oh man, that was a terrible move, and now I have to live with the consequences. Not even just when I'm tired, but just I may be in a lazy mood. I may be just exhausted from a long day. I may have just thought about something like intensely and my brain doesn't have the energy it needs to properly evaluate things, and I'll play a bad move here and there because of the time I was in to play that move, and then I have to live with the consequences for this correspondence games that lasts several weeks, and it sucks when that happens, when I'm just kind of sharp and on my game for a lot of the game, and then one day I'm just dull and it just ruins the game. That's not a good feeling. It feels like it's not deserved. You're trying to take each move as seriously as possible, so it's kind of a good practice in discipline. And I feel like, you know, I don't face this problem too often, and I've been trying to take each move seriously, and it's been paying off. I feel like most of the time I'm my judgment is okay when I'm playing correspondence games. I think twice about just slapping down a move and pressing next. I try to, you know, it's funny because in live games it seems like a very common problem and an easy pitfall where you just play a move without thinking too much because you're under time pressure, right? So in correspondence, you may think like, oh, you're never going to make that mistake, you have all the time in the world, but I actually do make that mistake. I just open the app and I click a move and I press submit because I just want to do that and I don't want to get over that move, and it bites you. Like, so you really are training some discipline in that level as well. And the thing is that this time pressure thing, it can be a bit of an anxiety inducing thing for people when they're playing live games because it's just too much time pressure and you just can't figure stuff out. But on the other side of the spectrum here, you can have analysis paralysis from having too much time to figure out the move. You know what I do? I open the app and I, or the website, and I look at my move. And if it's a move that's difficult, ambiguous, things like I can't figure it out, there's not much reading to do, I don't know what to do, it's like a big strategic move that I have to play, and or even worse, I have to count the points to see if it's worth playing a certain thing, I kind of get tired and I don't make a move. I move on. I'm like, okay, no, you know, I'm not playing this move. And I just quit the app and I save it for another time. Which honestly, that's also a good perk of the correspondence game. But I hate being in that section of, or that mode of the game where I don't want to play a move. And the thing is that time pressure, it forces you to play a move. So that countdown, it would have made me just play a random move. But since I have all the time in the world, I'm reluctant to play any old move because I want to play the best move because I have so much time. And I feel like I have a higher standard for the kind of moves that I play in a correspondence game. But sometimes I just get analysis paralysis and I don't want to play a move. And that's not so great. Another thing that kind of attests to this is that my fiance, when we were initially learning the game, or not initially, but when I introduced her to time controls, because she got me an awesome Go clock for as a gift. And when I was using it with her, she actually really enjoyed the clock because it kind of forced her to make moves and it broke her out of this analysis paralysis thing. So I think that kind of speaks to the fact that like there's something good about the time pressure that forces you to move along with the moves. Which correspondence games don't really have, but it is a good way to teach yourself some discipline in making decisions, even though you're uncertain, and even though you have all the time in the world. I think there's a lot of stuff in life where we have so much time to decide on things, so we take as much time as we can, and we don't really make the best decision because we took so much time. Another struggle of correspondence games is that if your opponent is not managing their time well. They play very far into the game and won't resign. It can take months. It really can. Or if they just kind of play very sporadically, use their vacation time on OGS, correspondence games can take quite a while. Usually I don't encounter this. Usually people who are playing correspondence games with me, they are pretty on top of it. They'll play within a couple days. And I really like that, but sometimes every now and then you'll come across an opponent who takes a lot of time. So, I mean, the thing is that with correspondence time controls, you want to do a time control that is short enough that, you know, you can kind of keep the game moving, but long enough that let's say something comes up and you're kind of blocked out for a day and you can't really play because you're kind of busy. You don't want to have like lost every game in your list. So you want a little flexibility and you want a little bit of momentum, but sometimes that flexibility side of things can be abused and it just stretches out the game quite a while. And especially if the opponent takes a long time to make a move in the middle of a game, that's like in a complex fight or battle or whatever, it can be very hard to get back into it and remember what was going on and remember your thought processes. But again, this is also good practice for whole board evaluation. Instead of going back to the game and looking at your move and just playing whatever was local, you can look and reevaluate the entire board and make sure that you are playing the right part of the board. And lastly, with correspondence games, I don't review them. I probably should, but I can never remember how a game went afterwards. I don't remember the story of the game. Almost never review them. I've been playing a game over the course of weeks or months, and then I finish and I go back and I'm like, I kind of remember this happening. So maybe that's a weakness of mine. Maybe I should take better notes. Maybe I should just write down some variations during the game or even just the very minimum, mark out and bookmark certain points of the game where I should review. But I don't, and I'm kind of okay with that. So that's those are my thoughts on correspondence games. I've mentioned OGS a few times in this episode, and that's for a clear reason that OGS is the king of servers when it comes to correspondence games. I mean, you really can't, I think it's started out as a correspondence server, in fact. So it really has it in its roots. There's really no comparison with any other server. A lot of servers don't even offer correspondence games. So if you want to play correspondence games, OGS is really the place to go. Though I will give a couple honorable mentions. I used to play on Dragon Go server, which is also a correspondence server. And then also Paduk Pop has correspondence in it as well. But now it's time for the DDK Advice Corner. And the tip of the day is... learn what it means to play lightly. So if you don't know this concept, it's a great way to kind of not commit fully. If there's an invasion and it's too risky of an invasion, it looks really dangerous and you're kind of scared of trying something there. But at the same time, maybe it's too risky not to invade. If you don't invade that section, maybe you're just going to be way behind on points. Try playing lightly. And this is not the only situation where you should play lightly, but it's probably one of the clearest examples, I think. You make that invasion, and when your opponent responds there, don't think that stone needs to be fully saved. Now that stone has affected that area of the board, and it's different now. You can play away from that stone just a bit and not be fully connected with the stone and find value in different ways. By playing that way. Playing lightly means being light on your toes, being willing to sacrifice your stones here and there to get an overall picture and presence of your stones in that area. It's a tough concept to learn, but once you start doing it and once you start realizing what you can do by playing lightly, not fully committing and playing these very thick, solid, heavy moves where you connect these stones together and they're very, very, concentrated. When you play lightly, you can kind of be flexible and expand your strategy and keep your options open. Try to think about that. It's a difficult concept, but if you haven't thought of it, it's good to be aware of it. And now it's time for listener mail. Martin writes, "Hi Justin, it is really interesting to hear these old texts. Somehow they're still so relevant. Loved the episode. Greetings from snowy Austria, Martin." Thanks again, as always, for writing in, Martin. He's referring to the second half of the Classic of Wei Qi episode. And yes, I love how relevant they are. They're so old, and that you read them, and the words, they just... they speak to the game. It's like you know that we're playing the same game because all the things that they're saying still make sense today, even after the AI revolution. So again, thanks for writing from Austria, Martin. Spooky H7P writes, "Finally caught up from when I started listening about 4 months ago. Just a quick opinion on this bit of the text, which you said you didn't understand. When danger looms, when your adversary has penetrated one of your configurations, do not play there, because to do so would simply mean placing pieces and not placing them." Okay, so this is a quote from the Classic of Wei Qi episode, and I said I didn't really understand what that meant. So here is Spooky to save the day. "I think this is referring to trying to save groups that cannot be saved. Just play away. I think placing pieces and not placing them is probably an idiom that didn't translate well, but just means making moves that don't achieve anything." I mean, the simplest explanation is probably correct. I think that I would bet on that being the right interpretation. So thanks for the interpretation, Spooky. And I feel like that's good advice. So I mean, it's funny because we know this advice exists. You know you're not supposed to be playing moves all over this one area of the board where you're clearly dead, but it's like sunk cost fallacy and you just can't help but keep committing to it. And it's like a character test in the game of Go. And I love that. Thanks for writing in again, Spooky. And the question of the week this week is, What do you think of correspondence games? Do you love them? Do you hate them? What would you rate them? If you want to let me know, leave your thoughts in an email. I got this out of order today. You can comment on YouTube or the Reddit post for this episode, or you can email me directly at starpointbaduk@gmail.com. That's starpointbaduk@gmail.com. If you're a YouTube listener, I would greatly appreciate a like if you enjoyed the episode. And if you haven't subscribed, subscribe would be great as well. If you're a podcast listener, reviews and ratings are also great. Thanks so much to Jeffrey H., James B., John M., and Tristan for supporting Starpoint. Anybody remember Chuck Norris jokes? I'm kind of dating myself here by making a reference to Chuck Norris jokes. But I wanted to start something with Honinbo Dosaku, because I think he's kind of like a Chuck Norris figure from back in the ancient world, because Honinbo Dosaku doesn't rank up. He ranks everyone else down. Thanks for listening. Keep playing Go.